Okay, we're in the middle of Parshas Noach. And we were about to summarize the dates, when the Mabul began and how long the Mabul took place for. So there are two opinions in the Gemara. There are two Tanoim in the Gemara, Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yoshua. They are both disciples of Rabbi Yochanan, who was a disciple of Hillel, right? Hillel began his Nesias. Hillel started being the Nasi, the one who was in charge when we didn't have king, at the time of the Second Temple. We had a king, but not a king that was a Torah Jew. So Hillel was the Nasi 100 years before the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. Now, his lowest disciple is Rabbi Yochanan, and he had five students, and one of those five students was Rabbi Yoshua. One of them was Rabbi Elezer. Rabbi Elezer is the famous Rabbi Elezer ben Hyrcanus. Anytime we encounter Rabbi Elezer in the Mishnah, that's Rabbi Elezer, the son of the wealthy man named Hyrcanus. Now, when he was a young man, he was plowing fields for his father, and one day his father finds him crying. So his father says, "Why are you crying? You don't want to plow the rough fields, I'll give you the easy fields." He passed him over to the easy fields, he's still crying. He says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "I want to learn Torah." So he says, his father told him, "You're an old man. Your age, you get married, have kids, teach them Torah. What do you need to learn Torah for?" And Rabbi Elezer wasn't happy with that. So he fasted and fasted and cried. And finally, Eliyahu appeared to him and told him, "You want to learn Torah? Go up to Jerusalem, go learn by Rabbi Yochanan." So Rabbi Elezer ran away from home and he came to Rabbi Yochanan and started crying. Rabbi Yochanan asked him, "Why are you crying?" So he said, "I want to learn Torah." So he asked him, "Well, do you know how to bench? Do you know Kriya Shema?" "No, I don't know Parsha Shema. I don't know how to bench." Didn't know anything. So he told him how to bench. He told him Kriya Shema. And then he said, "Okay." So Rabbi Elezer started crying again. So he asked him, "Why are you crying?" He said, "I want to learn Torah." So finally, Rabbi Yochanan agreed. He said, "Every day come to me. I'll teach you two halachos." And every day, Rabbi Elezer would chazer those two halachos. And slowly but surely, he grew and grew and grew. He was staying in a room by a man named Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Every time we encounter Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, anytime it says Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Now, in that room, Rabbi Yeshua assumed he was eating by Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan assumed he was getting his food by Rabbi Yeshua. So neither one gave him a meal. And he was going eating the grass from the fields until one day his breath smelled so bad that Rabbi Elezer had him stay away from him. So that Rabbi Yochanan had him stay away. So Rabbi Elezer started crying. He said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "You're treating me like a person that had a leper, someone who has boils, someone who you're disgusted from." So they asked him, "Where you eat? Where'd you eat lately?" He said, "What do you mean? I'm well taken care of by my host, by Rabbi Shoben Hanani." He said, "I don't think so." He sent word to Rabbi Shoben Hanani. He said, "Has Rabbi Elezer been eating by you these last few weeks?" And he said, "No, I thought he was eating by you." They realized that he hasn't been eating any normal food. So Rabbi Yochanan blessed him. He said, "Just like the bad smell from your mouth came before me, so too the smell of Torah should go up to Shemayim from your mouth." And Rabbi Elezer learned and learned and learned by Rabbi Yochanan. He was categorized as bor sud, a pit that's well lined so that it doesn't lose anything when you store wine or water in that pit. And that's because he didn't say anything he didn't learn from his Rebbe. He learned very, very well, and he retained everything he learned. And he was one of the greatest disciples of Rabbi Yochanan. He started off at the age of 20-something. He didn't know much. He didn't even know how to bench. And he learned and he learned and he learned until finally he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. One day his brothers convinced his father was a wealthy man, they said, "Dad, Eliezer ran away from home. Go up to Jerusalem and take a vow before all the great rabbis that because Eliezer ran away, he's not getting anything from your inheritance." So they convinced him. He traveled to Jerusalem and he came to Rabbi Yochanan's Beis Medrash. When he came in, word got out, "Ooh, Eliezer's father's here." Now, time had passed. Eliezer had grown a long beard. Now, he was a rabbi. So, when Hyrcanus, this wealthy man, came to town, so they sent him to Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan gave word to the Talmidim. The way it worked in the Beis Medrash was, everyone sat in the order of how smart they were, how much Torah they knew. So, Rabbi Yochanan passed word to the students, when Rabbi Elezer enters, sit tightly. Don't let him sit down. Every time he tries to take a seat, say, "No, no, no, there's no room here. You're on a higher level. You go up. You go up." Until finally he's sitting next to me at the head of the yeshiva. So Hyrcanus comes to visit this wealthy man. they set him up with the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Lezer walks into Beis Medrash and he tries to sit down in his place, and they say, no, you've moved up a level, no room for you here, go up. So he goes up to the next seat, and again they tell him, no room for you, move up. So he goes up and up and up till he reaches Rabbi Yochanan. And they had his father hidden. His father didn't. They placed his father in a place where Eliezer wouldn't see him. So Rabbi Yochanan tells Eliezer, he tells him, I want you to darshan today. He says, I'm going to darshan in front of you. I want you to give the speech today. You give the shir. So Eliezer said, I can't give a shir in front of you. He was embarrassed. They didn't want to say a word. So Rabbi Yochanan said, I'm leaving the room and you're giving shir today. And Rabbi Yochanan left the room. Rabbi Lezer started giving shir. The Medrash says he gave a shir like hadn't been heard since the time the Torah was given. He said things that hadn't ever been heard. Such tremendous chidushim, he said. Until Rabbi Yochanan walked in behind him and kissed him on the head and blessed him. And Hyrcanus said, who's this great wise man who's giving such a drasha? So they said, it's your son. So he said, yeah, that's my boy. That's my boy. That's my Eliezer. So when Eliezer turned around, he saw his father Hyrcanus, he got scared. I mean, he had ran away from home. So his father said, don't worry, I came here to take on a vow that you're not going to have any portion of my inheritance. Now I'm going to take a vow in front of all the wise men that only you're going to inherit me. None of your brothers are going to inherit anything. Now this whole story is the beginning of a medrash called Pirkei D'Rav Eliezer. It's one of the most ancient medrashim we have. And we're going to quote from it throughout the year. So anytime we encounter Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, that's this Eliezer, the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan. Pirkei D'Rav Eliezer, right, it's him. And he's the Rabbi Eliezer that we're about to discuss. Now, when he grew up, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He happens to be the first opinion that's quoted in the Mishnah. You start the first Mishnayos in Shas, you start the beginning of Brachos, the first opinion that's quoted in the whole Shas is Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer shows up a lot in Shas. His counterpart is Rabbi Shua ben Chananya. And when they grew up, so there are many stories that we know about Hillel and Shammai, about the Gerim that came to them and how strict Shammai was with them and how Hillel was so kind.
Tell me the whole Torah on one leg.
Right. So the similar stories are told about Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Eliezer. It seems that Rabbi Eliezer was very stern, like Shammai. And ultimately, when it came time to Paskin to decide what the halacha is going to be, so we say in halacha that we don't go in halacha like Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer is Shamuti, he's like Shammai. So in halacha, Rabbi Yeshua is stronger. But historically, Rabbi Eliezer is considered a great, great, great Talmud Chacham. The great Rabbi Akiva, who the whole Torah Sheba'al Peh, the whole oral law rests on his shoulders, on his disciples, learned by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So now we're going to discuss one of the many disagreements between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And that is, when was the world created?
We pass here with Rabbi Yeshua.
Rabbi Yeshua. Usually we go to Rabbi Yeshua. When was the world created? Rabbi Eliezer says, in Tishrei the world was created, like we go. That's a question. Why do we go to Rabbi Eliezer in this? Rabbi Yeshua says, no, the world was created in Nisan. When was the Mabul? So Rabbi Eliezer says the Mabul was on the 17th of Cheshvan. The Pasuk says the 17th day of the second month. So being that Rabbi Eliezer holds the world was created in Tishrei, so the second month is Cheshvan. Right? Tishrei Cheshvan. Now we're in the second month in Cheshvan. And Rabbi Yeshua holds, no, the Mabul began in Iyar. So we're going to go with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rashi seems to go mainly with Rabbi Eliezer, even though he also quotes Rabbi Yeshua, he goes to Rabbi Eliezer. So the Mabul began on the 17th of Cheshvan. It lasted 40 days, and that ends on the 28th day of Kislev. That's when it stopped raining. Now for 150 days, the water didn't recede at all. The land was covered with water. On the 1st of Sivan, the water started recessing.
After 150 days.
On the 1st of Av, a month later, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av. 2 months later, a month and a half later, from 17th Sivan. The 1st of Sivan, they started recessing. On the 1st of Av, 2 months later, the heads of the mountains were seen. And then we have 40 days until the 10th of Elul, where Noah wants to see if it's time to get out. And he takes the raven out of a window he has on top of the teva, and he lets the raven out. The Gemara says that the raven was one of the animals that had marital relations in the teva, even though they weren't supposed to. So So he takes the raven out, and the raven doesn't want to go. He says, why are you sending me? You probably want to steal my wife. So Noah said, you Russia, I couldn't even build my own wife. I'm going to take your wife? So it's interesting. Chazal taught us that if one person starts speaking badly about another person, says, you know, that person, I know his mother wasn't faithful, he's a mamzer, no one can marry him. So halachically we say, ooh, who gave him a right to talk that way about someone else? Must be that he himself is that way. So halachically we say, whoever starts speaking that way about someone else, kol haposel, whoever says a psul, something bad about someone else, bemumo posel, we assume he himself has that fault. We don't believe him about someone else, and we say he himself has that fault, no one should marry him and his family. So we have a rule, and that's a rule ideologically also. The things that we're weakest at are weak points we tend to see in other people. When we see something bad about someone else, usually it's because we have that bad thing. So I thought to myself, maybe that's what's going on with the raven. The raven himself wasn't faithful. God said, don't have marital relations. What did the raven do? He didn't listen. So he's thinking, gee, if I'm such a Rasha, then Noach must be a Rasha just like me. So he doesn't want to go out. He says, I'm not going. Now there's another medrash that says differently. It says that Noach sent out the raven, and the raven is a Rasha. You send the messenger as a Rasha, so you get bad results. The raven flew out and found the carcass and sat with the carcass and ate it up and never came back to Noach. That's a different medrash. So the raven wasn't a good shaliach, wasn't a good messenger. So Noach sends out the dove.
A week later or right away?
I think right away. Now the dove, the Jews are compared to the dove. Yonasi v'chagvei asela, we say in Shir Hashir. The Jewish people are compared to a dove, sometimes like a dove that's in between the cracks of the rocks. The eagle is soaring down and wants to get it. So it jumps in between the crevices of the rocks. And the eagle's there waiting to bounce on it outside the rocks. And it turns around in the crevice and it sees a snake. Now where is it going to go? That's Am Yisrael. We run from this enemy and we turn around and we see there's another one waiting for us. And where are we going to go? So the Jewish people are compared to a dove. Why? Because the dove protects itself with its wings. It fights with the wings. So too the Jewish people have the mitzvos that are like their wings. They're their protectors. The dove is similar to man. The way it drinks is similar to man. When it has marital relations, it is sanua, it is modest. It doesn't do it in public, not like other animals, and that's like man. And it doesn't eat carcasses. That's also like man. So Noach takes a good messenger, the Yonah, the dove. He sends it, and the dove comes back, and no can do. It's got nowhere to land. So he realizes nothing doing. He waits. And after another 7 days, he sends the dove again. And now he's getting worried. By his calculations, he wants to get out of here already. So he starts davening. This is the first time we see Noach davening. What happened? Why wasn't he davening beforehand? It's a good question. That's where Chazal have a claim against Noah. Noah, the whole world's being destroyed. Why aren't you davening for them? So now that he's stuck and he doesn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, the dove just came back and didn't have where to land, he starts downing. He says, God, let me out of here. He waits another 7 days and again he sends out the dove. And this time in the evening, the dove comes back with an olive branch, an olive leaf. And it's telling Yonah, you know, it's telling Noah, you know, I'd rather have bitter things like the olive leaves and have God feed me than have it from you. Notice in benching we ask God the same thing. We say, don't make us come on to other people giving us gifts. Chazal tells, there are three types of people who are in a situation where their life feels like it's worthless. One is a guy whose wife keeps telling him what to do. Every time he turns around and says, do that! You did this! Oh. He spends his life in terror of his wife. Chazal said that's one man whose life is like it's not worth living. Another man, the Gemara says, is a person, Somech HaShochan Chaveru, who doesn't have a parnasa. He doesn't have where to live from. He's always waiting. Is this guy going to give me what to eat? Is that guy going to give me what to eat? If he doesn't have a source of income that he can rely on, that's a life that's not worth anything. So the dove was in a situation, it couldn't go out and get its own food. It has to wait for Noach to bring it its food. It says, God, I'd rather have my food from you. And having our food from God is a blessing. God says one of the blessings of the land of Israel is that it gets sustained from rain. Other lands, their sustenance comes from the Nile, Egypt. They have the Nile. They don't need to pray to God. They just have to dig irrigation ditches. They have water. Israel isn't that way. If it isn't going to rain, everything's going to die. And that's a blessing. That means we're connected with God. What was the curse of the snake? The snake caused Adam and Eve to sin, Adam and Chava. So what did God curse? He said, wherever you go, you'll eat dust. What kind of curse is that? He always has food. So they say the reasoning is that God was saying, I don't want to have anything to do with you. You could have your food wherever you want. I don't want you to ever turn to me. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Rav Gold, he's a rabbi in Arnov. He said that he never understood this until he was rabbi in Miami. And he was called in. There was a kid who said he wants to commit suicide. So they sent the kid in to Rabbi Gold, and he asked him, what's wrong? So the kid says, my father gave me an unlimited credit card. He bought me a penthouse. He got me a car. I have unlimited access to money. I have everything I need. I want to commit suicide. So he said, why? So he said, well, my mother and father, I don't remember if his mother passed away or they got divorced. And then my father wanted to marry another woman. And my father's very wealthy. And she said, on condition that I don't have to see your son, I don't want to have anything to do with him. Detach from him completely. So my father said, okay. And he called me over and he said, look, I'm marrying this woman. You can't ever call me again. You can't have anything to do with me. But I want to support you. You have everything you want. I bought you a house. You have an unlimited credit card. You can buy whatever you want. You have everything you need in life. Just not me. And that's why the kid wanted to commit suicide. So that was the curse of the Nachash. The snake was told, you got everything. You got food wherever you go. But God doesn't want to have anything to do with you. There's a saying in English, they say, yell at me, beat me, but acknowledge that I'm there. The worst thing you could do to a person is not to acknowledge him at all. So the pigeon was saying, the dove was saying, I want it from God. And we say that in benching every day. We say, God, let us have it from you, not from mankind. Al tivienu loli de manas basar v'dom, loli de alvasam, I don't want to have to take loans, I don't want to get gifts. I want it from you, God. Noach recognizes that things are getting better, so he removes the roof from the teva, and he sees that the land has dried. The waters have gone to the sea, the waters have subsided, the underground springs have closed. Yeah. Okay. He sent the dove after another 7 days, the dove didn't come back. He took off the roof of the teva, and he sees everything's dry. But he says, when I entered the teva, God told me enter, so I entered. So I'm not going to leave till God tells me to leave. And God tells Noach, leave. You, your wife, your sons, their wives, all the animals, let them go out, let them flourish, let them have children. Fru Urvu, a new commandment to have children. And anyone that doesn't want to leave the teva, kick them out. Why wouldn't someone want to leave the teva? It's been good here. You know, we're in our little enclave. We're in yeshiva. We don't have to deal with the outside world. How many tough things do you have to deal with? You're in your anone akavod. That was the problem with Jewish people. I said, we don't want to deal with life. We have the clouds surrounding us. God's sending us food from heaven. We got to go into the land. It's easier to be in a yeshiva where you don't have to deal with life. Sometimes you got to go out. So God tells Noach, you know, there's a time to go out. So take him out. Obviously, David Amel said, Shifti Vez Shem Koy Mechayai. A person is always supposed to be connected to yeshiva and take time and spend it there. Comes home from work, he's supposed to go to yeshiva, but that there's a time when a person has to go out of yeshiva. Noach comes out, he builds a mizbeach, he takes from the pure animals. If you recall, he took 7 of each of the pure animals. He takes from those animals, and he brings a sacrifice.
I read, I think it was a Midrash that says when he actually left the ark and he saw how the whole world was desolate, that's when he started praying to God, and then God said, "Now you pray," and you didn't pray before. And
could be. I don't know.
Man. No. Anyways.
Noach brought a carbon. And God saw that Noach is bringing a carbon. And God said, you know, I see that man is bad because he has a tendency to go bad. From the time he is about to be born inside his mother's womb, he's already edging to do things bad. So I don't have to destroy them like I did until now. God makes a promise that he won't wipe out the whole world with the Mabul, and that the ways of the world are not going to change again. Meaning during the time of the Mabul, day and night didn't exist. The seasons ceased. Everything was balagan. Nothing was the way it should have been. And God makes a promise that that's not going to happen again. Now God says, Noach, you know, you saved all the animals, so you're entitled from now on to eat from the animals. You're allowed to kill animals and eat them. You're in charge of the animals. But don't eat Aver Minachai. You're not allowed to eat a piece of flesh taken from a live animal or blood from a live animal. You're not allowed to murder your fellow man.
Blood from a dead animal.
We're not allowed to. Noach was allowed to. And just because I'm letting you kill animals, don't think I'm going to let you kill one another. If you kill someone, then I'll take you to task. If there are witnesses, then you, Noach, have a responsibility to set up a court and judge the person and kill him if you have witnesses that he killed him on purpose. If he killed him by mistake, he should recognize that he's supposed to go to Golis. See, even Goyim are supposed to go to Golis. They're supposed to recognize they did something wrong and they need a repentance. And if there are no witnesses, then I'll take care of him. Have kids and multiply. Don't worry, I'm not going to destroy the world again. Noach was thinking, why should I have kids? The world will be destroyed again. God says, don't worry, have kids. And the fact that these two things are adjacent, that God says, he who murders is going to get killed. And have kids, Chazal teaches from that, that if a person does not concern himself with having children, it's as though he's murdering. We have a responsibility to bring children to the world. And if we don't take up that responsibility, then we're considered like shofei damim. And the same thing Chazal also say, if a person is me'onin, if a person causes himself to emit sperm and not in married form, so that's also, that's called shochtei yeladim, the Gemara says. As though he's sacrificing children. Have children, have a wife and have children. God tells Noach and his children, I'm making a treaty with you and your offsprings, with all the animals. I'm making a treaty and I'll keep the treaty. I'm not going to destroy mankind again. I'm not going to destroy the whole world again. I will not bring a Mabul again. But maybe God will bring down fire that God didn't promise. He says, I won't bring a Mabul again to destroy the whole world. And I'm going to give you a sign. What's the sign? You'll see a rainbow in the clouds. When I give a rainbow in the clouds, that's a sign that, gee, you guys are doing bad. I should really punish the world. But because of this treaty, I'm not doing it. And that's why we're not supposed to look for rainbows. It's a bad sign. It means we're not living up to what we should. You see a rainbow, you shouldn't tell someone, gee, there's a rainbow, you can make the blessing. There's a special blessing on the rainbow, which we thank God for keeping his end of the deal, keeping up the treaty. And you're not supposed to point it out. It's a bad sign. Now, when I was a little boy, so the Rebbe taught us, and I never saw this inside, but this is what the Rebbe taught us when I was a little boy, that the custom was in ancient times, that when two people would have a fight and they'd want to show that the fight was over, so each one would take the bow and face it to themselves. They turn the bow around as though, you see, ceasefire, I'm not shooting. And the Rebbe said that that was the idea of the keshet, the rainbow. The rainbow is the shape of a bow facing towards God. So it was God's sign that I'm ceasefire, I'm not shooting anymore. I'm not going to destroy the whole world. I think we have to get ready for Meyer.